Israel's latest air and artillery strikes killed dozen more civilians across the Gaza Strip, raising the genocidal war's death toll to over 44,200. A ceasefire between Lebanon and Israel has officially come into effect, ending over a year of the Israeli regime's deadly attacks on the country, which intensified during the last 2 months. This after U.S. President Joe Biden announced that both sides had agreed to a deal. The Israeli War Cabinet approved a U.S. brokered deal ahead of Biden's announcement. The U.N. chief, Antonio Guterres, welcomed the cessation of hostilities, hoping it would put an end to the war's suffering and destruction. Under the agreement, the fighting at Lebanon's southern border will come to a complete end. The deal will also see Israeli troops withdraw from southern Lebanon, with the Lebanese army redeploying in the region. Hezbollah will then move its assets to the north of the Litani River. The transition process is set to take place during a 60-day period. Meanwhile, Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it needs to review the terms of the ceasefire agreement reached between Lebanon and the Israeli regime. Senior Hezbollah official Mahmoud Ghomati says the group needs to make sure the agreement is in the same deal that the two sides reached last week in an effort to bring the Israeli war to an end. He said that Hezbollah does not trust Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to adhere to the terms of the agreement. Hezbollah has said it will not accept any deal that violates Lebanon's sovereignty. This ceasefire deal has drawn reactions from inside the occupied territories. Israeli far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gvir has said Tel Aviv did not achieve the war's goals of returning northern residents to their homes safely. Meanwhile, an opinion poll by Israel's Channel 13 shows more than 60% of Israeli people believe that the regime did not win the war with Hezbollah. The Israeli aggression against Lebanon also resulted in staggering financial losses for the regime, with total damages estimated at $1.35 billion over the past year. The co-director of International Action Center, Sarah Flounders, weighs in on the U.S. brokered ceasefire between Lebanon and Israel.
I think we should keep in mind that the U.S. is not neutral. They funded this war. Israel is their proxy. And they've attempted to bail them out. And President Netanyahu made a point of thanking President Biden for bailing them out. At the same time, he said it's a deal so that Israel can focus on Iran. Now, having failed in Lebanon and failed to defeat the Palestinian people, how they can take on Iran, that's another question, of course. But it does show that this is not a deal in good faith. It is applauded by France. That says a lot. By the EU, that says even more. These are the forces that are absolutely 100% behind Israel and anxious to keep their little proxy, who was being pummeled, alive and fighting another day, and anxious to ship more weapons to Israel for the next round of attacks. So I don't think this will hold for long, because who signed it and who wants it?
Just hours before the ceasefire, the Israeli regime pressed ahead with its airstrikes on Lebanon, striking once again the southern suburbs of Beirut. Israeli warplanes bombed a residential complex in the Noveri area of Beirut, killing 7 people. Multiple areas west of Baalbek in the Bera Valley, eastern Lebanon, were hit as well. The IOF also bombed 20 buildings in Dahiya, the southern suburb of Beirut. In southern Lebanon, the Israeli military has struck around 30 targets since Tuesday morning. The regime's warplanes have kept pounding Beirut and southern Lebanon indiscriminately, despite international efforts to establish a ceasefire. The Israeli war on Lebanon has so far claimed the lives of over 3,700 people and left nearly 15,700 others injured. Hezbollah has also carried out fresh retaliatory operations against Israeli military sites and settlements deep inside the occupied territories, hitting a number of the regime's vital bases. In its latest statement, the group said it has launched an aerial attack using squadrons of advanced drones, targeting a series of sensitive military objectives in Tel Aviv and its surroundings, and is scoring direct hits. Hezbollah also targeted Israel's Sharaga base 4 times with drones and rockets. The base is the administrative headquarters of the Golani Brigade, north of Acre. The group also hit a number of Israeli settlements, including Malot, Tarshiha, and Kabri, with a salvo of rockets. The Lebanese resistance targeted gatherings of Israeli forces in a number of settlements, including Metula and Kiryat Shmona. Hezbollah also destroyed an Israeli bulldozer and a Merkava tank near Khiam in southern Lebanon, resulting in casualties among its crew. Israeli air and artillery strikes continue to pound Gaza, leaving more Palestinian civilians dead or injured across the blockaded territory. At least 8 people were killed after Israeli warplanes bombed a school housing displaced Palestinians east of the Gaza City. Elsewhere in the city, several people, including children, were killed in the Israeli bombing of a Palestinian home in Al Zaytun neighborhood. In the northern Gaza, an Israeli quadcopter opened fire, killing a child and injuring several others in Jabalia. The Israeli aggression, which began in October last year, has so far claimed the lives of over 44,200 Palestinians, and over 104,000 others have been injured. Lack of food, water, and other basic necessities is taking its toll on the Gaza population, a Geneva-based rights organization says. Israel has been preventing the entry of such need for more than a year now. Israel has carried out fresh airstrikes on Syria as the regime intensifies its aggression against the Arab country. According to Syrian media, the attacks targeted 2 border crossings with Lebanon. They came shortly after a ceasefire deal between Israel and Lebanon was announced. Syria's Red Crescent said a volunteer was killed as a result of the attack, which also left a number of volunteers injured. The attack targeted the Al-Dabasiya and Al-Arida crossing in the countryside of Homs and Tartus. Earlier, a number of similar air raids also struck 2 villages in the Homs province. Over the past few months, Israelis have stepped up attacks across Syria in violation of international law and Syria's sovereignty. Many civilians have fallen victim to these attacks. A group of 7 foreign ministers summit has wrapped up in Italy amid protests over Israel's genocide in Gaza and its aggression on Lebanon. Max Civelli reports.
On Tuesday, foreign ministers from 7 of the world's major economies gathered for a second day of talks in the historic town of Fuji, southeast of Rome. During the 2-day summit, the ministers of Italy, US, Canada, UK, France, Germany and Japan discussed the situation in West Asia, Ukraine and in the Indo-Pacific as pressure to advance diplomatic efforts to resolve crisis in these regions is mounting. A group of pro-Palestine protesters staged a static demonstration in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians in the vicinity of the venue of the summit meeting. The G7 countries have provided political support for the Israeli regime and have significantly contributed to increasing insecurity and instability in West Asia, particularly through the U.S. military and financial support for Tel Aviv.
This is the G7 summit of genocide. All countries involved are Israel's major accomplices. Not only the US and the EU have unconditionally provided weapons to Netanyahu, but they have not done anything to stop the genocide. They have never condemned Israel for its atrocities. Furthermore, they are trying to delegitimize the International Criminal Court after arrest warrants against Netanyahu and Gallant were issued.
During the protest, international law experts explained that Italy must abide by the ICC's rulings, being one of the early signatories of the treaty that established the International Criminal Court.
I hope the ICC will issue arrest warrants also for all individuals from the US and the EU administrations and for whoever has violated international norms. Enough with this unbearable double standard. Enough with Israel's impunity.
the G7 summit. So the European Union's outgoing foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, say there are no excuses for Israel to refuse to accept a ceasefire with the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah.
We demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, but above all that Israel ends its carnage, its ethnic cleansing, its genocide, which some still find it hard to call it this way.
For the first time, the G7 ministers were joined by their counterparts from Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, the United Arab Emirates and Qatar, as well as the Secretary General of the Arab League, Max Civili, Press TV, Fuji.
Doctors and health workers in Yemen's capital, Sana'a, are raising their voices in solidarity with Gaza and Lebanon. They staged a protest to condemn what they describe as war crimes committed by Israel, including the targeting of hospitals, medical personnel, and civilians. They're also calling on international bodies to take immediate action. Abdul Latif Al-Washalid reports from Sana'a.
Dozens of medical professionals and health workers gathered in the Yemeni capital Sana'a united in outrage and grief. Their protests aimed to highlight the ongoing violence in Gaza and Lebanon, denouncing what they called Israel's deliberate attacks on hospitals, doctors and patients.
Our protest today is not only for the health sector in Sana'a, but also in the rest of the governorates. It is a show of solidarity with the Palestinian and Lebanese people, especially the health sector that is suffering greatly amid the ongoing Israeli aggression. We here want to express our full solidarity and our condemnation of the humanitarian and health violations that are taking place.
The demonstrators didn't mince words, accusing Israel of genocide and calling on the international community to take urgent action. They urged the United Nations to pressure Tel Aviv to halt its aggression, which has left more than 54,000 people dead or missing and over 100,000 injured in Gaza alone over the past year.
We declare our full solidarity with Gaza and Lebanon against the direct and systematic violation and targeting by the Zionist entity against health cadres and infrastructure and putting them out of service. We have previously suffered from the U.S.-backed Saudi aggression, so we declare our readiness to go to Gaza and Lebanon to save civilians there.
Among the chants and placards, a sense of vindication was palpable. The group hailed the International Criminal Court's recent arrest warrants for Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Minister of Military Affairs Yoav Gallant. For these demonstrators, it's a rare moment of justice in what they describe as a dark chapter of impunity.
For these health workers in Sana'a, the protest is more than a display of solidarity. They see it as a moral obligation to stand against what they describe as crimes against humanity. Their message to the international community is clear. It's time for accountability and action. Abdul Latif Al-Washalib, Sana'a.
The annual Palestine Film Days has opened in Vienna from Monday until Sunday. Several new movies about Palestinian cultures and resistance will be shown in the cinemas in the Austrian capital. Our correspondent Dieter Reinisch has more from Vienna.
Canaan, the sixth edition of the Palestine Film Festival, opened in the Austrian capital Vienna on Monday night. The event aims to create a platform for Palestinian filmmakers and films that address the lives and resistance of Palestinians in Palestine. Organizers told Press TV that it brings the stories and culture of Palestinians closer to the Viennese audience.
To support the Palestinian cause. And this is one of our main aims with this festival, to demonstrate that Palestinians are not only a fighting people fighting for their survival, but they are ready and they prove that they have a long tradition, they have culture, they are educated, and they have, in the meantime, there are many Palestinian film directors who got prizes.
On the first night, the film days opened with the recently completed film Where Olive Trees Weep by Zaya and Maurizio Benazzo. It provides a magnificent and shocking insight into the everyday life, struggles and resilience of the Palestinian people under the Israeli regime's occupation.
There is a certain mobilization, and our festival is part of this kind of mobilization of information to demonstrate people are supporting the Palestinians and motivate other people to do the same.
The Palestine Film Days were opened by Palestinian Ambassador Salah Abdel Shafi and attended by several other representatives and diplomats who used the event to show solidarity with Palestine. Among those were the ambassadors of Algeria and Malaysia.
Culture is resistance. And why is culture is resistance? Because we are dealing with the colonial, settler colonial occupation with the goal of eradicating Palestinian identities. That's why culture, in this case film, is extremely important to maintain the Palestinian identity. Then it is a struggle.
Over the coming days, movies about the 1948 Nakba, life under occupation in Al-Khalil, and the resistance of Bedouin community will be screened. Due to the overwhelming success of the Palestine Film Days, the organizers are already preparing for a seventh edition of the event in the coming spring.
Both film screenings were sold out before the festival. This despite a complete media blackout. The success of the festival is therefore a stark reminder of the solidarity with Palestine in Austria. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Take care and bye-bye.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
This past week turned out to be very eventful. The United States again vetoed the Gaza ceasefire resolution. The top international tribunal issued arrest warrants against Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant. And the UN nuclear agency passed a new resolution against Iran. Most important of all, the outgoing Joe Biden administration vetoed another ceasefire resolution that would supposedly put an end to the Israeli-American genocidal aggression against Gaza, which has now claimed more than 44,000 lives in almost 414 days, most of them women and children. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, this marks the fourth time since October 7 last year that the United States regime has vetoed a resolution aimed at stopping the American-funded Israeli carnage in the besieged Palestinian territory. The latest round of voting resulted in 14 council members voting for the resolution to end the aggression against Gaza and the United States being the lone veto against it. As one of five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, the U.S. veto power killed the resolution. Many organizations and countries have in recent days slammed the U.S. for abusing its power yet again to advance its own nefarious political interest. Within the context of U.S. imperialism's failure to deter the axis of resistance, the veto highlights the Biden-Harris administration's absolute commitment to the American-Israeli genocide of Palestinians. The outgoing administration has consistently framed its rejection of the U.N. resolutions as not being enough to condemn Hamas or return the Israeli captives held by the Palestinian resistance. As Vasily Nebezia, permanent Russian representative to the UN, noted, the latest resolution did in fact have a clause that promised and laid grounds for the return of Israeli captives in Gaza, while allowing in aid for Palestinians in Gaza and ending Israeli aggression and occupation of Gaza. The abuse of the U.S. veto power again serves to underscore its political commitment to Zionism and sets the ground for the incoming Donald Trump administration to continue to block any resolutions that would put an end to 14-month-long Zionist aggression, not only against Gaza, but Lebanon as well. The veto also comes shortly after a fake 30-day ultimatum given to Israel by the Biden-Harris administration to improve the situation and the flow of humanitarian resources into northern Gaza. The ultimatum was a political ploy to motivate U.S. voters to show up for Kamala Harris, as the deadline came shortly after the U.S. presidential election. Despite the situation deteriorating in northern Gaza, the ultimatum was scrapped, with U.S. officials falsely claiming that Israel has met its arbitrary standards. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Esmail Baghaei right stated that the veto was disgraceful and not only marks another failure of UNSC to uphold its charter-based mandate, but also serves as a U.S.-granted license for occupying regime to continue its carnage in Gaza and Lebanon with impunity. With Harris' presidential bid ending in a decisive defeat to Trump, the actions of the Democratic Party in the lame duck period reveal the two-party commitment to Israel and that they were never interested in securing peace, as they assured voters. The Democratic Party has been posturing as committed to a ceasefire, citing the deteriorating situation in Gaza while promising ironclad commitment to Israel. The veto was met with backlash from many Palestinian and human rights organizations across the world, as well as politicians, leaders, celebrities, authors, academics, and more. Majed Bamia, the deputy ambassador of Palestine to the UN, said, "There is no right to mass killing of civilians. There is no right to starve an entire civilian population. There is no right to forcibly displace a person. And there is no right to annexation. This is what Israel is doing in Gaza." However, anyone pinning their hope for a ceasefire resolution being passed through the UN Security Council has been incredibly misled. Those who thought Biden would do something right in his final days also got a reality check. The genocidal Joe has no change of heart. Biden regime officials such as Antony Blinken, Matthew Miller, and others have repeatedly stated their intent to remove Hamas from any power in Gaza and have been enthusiastic about the ongoing ethnic cleansing operations in northern Gaza. Many critics of the Zionist regime believe the Israeli occupation is laying the groundwork for removing Gazans completely. The Zionist regime has been clear in its intent to ensure Palestinians do not return to northern Gaza. Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is on the ground resisting Israeli aggression in Gaza, said the use of the U.S. veto in the UN Security Council to block a resolution for a ceasefire in Gaza confirms America's complicity in a war of extermination against the people of Palestine. The veto from the U.S. in the UN, paired with the U.S. insistence to keep arming Israel via the Senate vote the same day, which was again protested by some senators, mostly for posturing on grounds that the U.S. was violating its own weapons shipments laws, demonstrates that the United States is all in on supporting its colonial outpost in West Asia. It is the hand holding the gun pointed at millions of people in the region. Ironically, the very next day, the International Criminal Court issued arrest warrants for Israeli regime leaders, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former War Minister Yoav Gallant, for crimes in Gaza, citing specifically using starvation as a weapon and knowingly slaughtering thousands of Palestinians. The unanimous decision from a three-judge court announced in its statement, quote, "The chamber considered that there are reasonable grounds to believe that both individuals intentionally and knowingly deprived the civilian population in Gaza of objects indispensable to their survival, including food, water, and medicine and medical supplies, as well as fuel and electricity. It remains to be seen which countries follow through with honoring the Rome Statute and what countries and organizations will impose penalties, sanctions, or other forms of punishment on the illegitimate occupation entity." It's important to note the ICC is simply targeting two individuals within the Israeli regime, while also issuing an arrest warrant for Hamas military wing leader Mohammad Deif, showing the ICC is still very much an ally to liberal Zionism and world imperialism. The decision equates the victim with the perpetrator and fails to accurately condemn Zionism itself. The United States and Israel are not signatories to the Rome Statute and therefore do not have to follow through with any recommendations or issues from the ICC. In a way, ICC is desperately trying to save its own integrity as an enforcer of human rights. It was not long ago that an ICC prosecutor stated that the court was built for Africa and thugs like other people. The face of Zionism, Netanyahu has forced the court to finally act, though, in a mainly toothless matter in order to preserve the existing Western-oriented legal order or face being written off as a mockery forever. Thus, the only way to permanently stop the aggression against Palestine and its allies, both by American-Israeli forces as well as an imperialist-influenced international system, is a decisive resistance victory, nothing less. After over 410 days of genocide, the Zionist regime has failed to meet any of its stated military objectives while being entrenched in a new front against the Hezbollah resistance movement in the north, where it is failing to capture a single town after over a month of fighting. Hezbollah has stated it will not agree to any ceasefire with the Zionist regime without a ceasefire in Gaza. Simultaneously, the occupation entity is preparing for Iranian retribution for carrying out aggression against Iran late in October. Resistance in Iraq and Syria continue to carry out their own operations, while the Yemeni military continues a massively successful blockade of the Red Sea. The Biden legacy will go down as a legacy that financially, materially, and politically oversaw the genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. The incoming Trump administration will continue to back the Zionist regime, as well as advising and pressure its European client states, such as the UK, Germany, and France, to continue supporting the Zionist occupation with arms sales as well as political and financial support, despite ICC, or for that matter, even International Court of Justice rulings. The ICC ruling is an extremely limited one, but does pave the way for some organizations and entities to distance themselves from the occupation regime, at the very latest adding to its growing economic woes. But the most important equation on the field remains the same. Resistance until victory. No court or council can say otherwise.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, The Believer's Trials and Tribulations. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab. So this is a very big topic. The believers' trials and tribulations are things that we probably all talk about on a daily basis as believers. We're probably maybe sort of comparing notes with, let's say, with one of our friends. Maybe they're going through a particular hardship in their family. They've had some bad news. Maybe one of their kids has been taken to hospital, and maybe... And maybe just the day before that, a few days before that, it was sort of the other way around. The friend was maybe listening to us because maybe we had issues and trials that we were going through. And so obviously when we talk about this, a lot of it is, it's not just that we understand how it works, what these tests, trials and tribulations are for. When we share this knowledge and compare notes with what's happening within each other's lives, we also, obviously, we increase our connection with those people, with our fellow believers, with our brothers, sisters, friends, family. And also, we're just reinforcing amongst each other our faith and these understandings. So it's really important to sort of keep talking about these things on a, maybe even on a daily basis. So I'm just going to present a beautiful hadith from Imam Ali to you, who's, for example, said that he reported, verily, it's mentioned that of all mankind, the prophets undergo the severest of trials. And then after them, obviously, the pure people, after them, the elect to the extent of their nobility. And indeed, the believer undergoes trial in proportion to his good deeds. So, and I just want to stop there and sort of just pick up on this. The believer undergoes trials in proportion to his good deeds. So, obviously, what we're saying is that the better our deeds, the more good deeds we have, in a sense, the more we're also going to be tested. Welcome back. This is A to Z and RB English Radio. And I've been talking to you a little bit about the tests and trials, tribulations for the believer. So I'm going through a particular hadith from Imam Ali, and this idea that, well, you know, obviously as believers, our purpose in this world, because obviously the other things we're told. So this world, and I'll just remind you, is like a farm for us. So we sow everything in this world. And the harvest, in a sense, comes in the hereafter. So we sow our good deeds, we sow our good words, our good akhlaq, our pure, and try to purify our heart, obviously, in this world. And then all that will be returned to us in the hereafter. Now, obviously, So this is what we must do. We must accumulate good deeds. And the same time, but I just want to remind you, if you are on this path towards Allah, if you are on the, inshallah, if you are blessed to be firmly footed and walking, treading this path towards Allah, and you're gathering these good deeds, you are really working on yourself, then please remember that you are going to face big trials. And possibly, and we know this, because when we look at the life of the prophets, the trials of the prophets were massive. For example, we know Prophet Jacob was separated from, Prophet Yusuf for decades, and he was in so much pain that he even lost his eyesight. And this is a prophet. This is someone who is also commits no sins, does not even make errors. And yet the trials are huge. So bear this in mind. These big trials are going to come towards you. And so it's just saying to you, on the other hand, and you can look at it the other way. If you've got... This is what occurred to me the other day. If you've got huge hardships coming your way, well, maybe it means you're actually on the right path, so keep going and don't be scared of these huge trials. So inshallah, you've gained just a few little things about this, because obviously it's a huge topic. And inshallah, you'll tune in to A to Z and RB English Radio with me again. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
The Zionist regime has brazenly violated the fundamental principles of international humanitarian law, also known as the laws of war, with very little consequence. The ongoing genocide in Gaza epitomizes the utter failure of global institutions and the lie of the rules-based order. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "The Zionist regime's onslaught since October 7, 2023 has made the densely populated territory of Gaza, only 25 miles long and 6 miles wide, unlivable. Despite the profound environmental impact and the implications for global climate stability, the destruction of Gaza's environment, ecosystems and food production systems has not been answered with international action. Independent experts have defined ecocide as unlawful or wanton acts committed with knowledge that there is a substantial likelihood of severe and either widespread or long-term damage to the environment being caused by those acts. From the start, the Zionist regime was honest about its goal, the destruction of Gaza. Israel's indiscriminate attacks and the use of weapons with wide-area effects are aimed at causing as much damage as possible. This has led not only to significant civilian casualties, but the annihilation of entire ecosystems. Israel has destroyed or damaged all 5 of Gaza's wastewater treatment facilities, contaminating beaches and coastal waters, soils, and potentially the groundwater. According to a UN environmental assessment published in June, untreated sewage released into the Mediterranean Sea pollutes the marine environment and coastal habitats." The Zionist regime also will likely cause harm to Gaza's fishing industry, fish being a key source of food, and fishing a traditional vocation in the territory, where rates of food insecurity and unemployment are catastrophically high. According to the UN assessment, marine pollution can impair the nutrition and quality of waters, thus restricting the growth of fishes, and thus impact fish production and catches. The UN adds, pollution can also impact food safety, as fish in the inshore areas, which are currently the only areas Palestinians can fish, can become contaminated. The Wadi Gaza wetlands, an internationally important refuge for migratory birds and other wildlife, where ecological restoration was underway before October 7, 2023, have been damaged by military operations and pollution, threatening its biodiversity. Some 25 to 50% of Wadi Gaza is believed to have been destroyed as of June, the UN states, and with it, the ecosystem services it provides. Additionally, fresh water sources like wells and groundwater reservoirs have been contaminated, affecting people's access to safe drinking water and harming essential ecosystems reliant on these resources. Israel's attacks have resulted in the accumulation of more than 42 million metric tons of debris throughout Gaza, much of it likely contaminated with asbestos, unexploded ordnance, and other toxic pollutants. Israel's severe restrictions on the import of fuel and a lack of proper equipment have also hindered the recovery of thousands of decomposing bodies underneath the rubble, exacerbating the humanitarian and environmental crisis. The collapse of solid waste management systems due to Israeli destruction has also led to the formation of approximately 225 makeshift waste disposal sites across Gaza, some stretching for hundreds of meters, as reported by the Dutch organization PAX in July this year. UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, reported in June that more than 330,000 tons of solid waste had accumulated in populated areas of Gaza, enough to fill more than 150 football fields, according to PAX. These sites have become breeding grounds for pests, rodents, and diseases among Gaza's displaced population. Satellite imagery analyzed by British Broadcasting Corporation shows that more than half of Gaza's water and sanitation facilities have been damaged or destroyed. Most wastewater treatment and desalination plants have ceased operations entirely, leading to the discharge of untreated sewage into the sea, streets and camps, sheltering internally displaced people. This poses a severe threat of groundwater contamination, compounding the crisis of waterborne diseases, especially among vulnerable populations, including children, women and people with chronic illnesses. The agricultural sector has also been heavily targeted. As of March, nearly half of Gaza's tree crops, including olive groves, had been destroyed, as have nearly one-third of Gaza's greenhouses, according to a report in The Guardian based on satellite imagery. 90% of greenhouses in northern Gaza were destroyed in the early stages of the ground invasion, according to the UK research group Forensic Architecture. A study by Samer Abdonur and Nicholas Roy estimates that some 80,000 tons of carbon emissions are expected during the rubble removal process in Gaza. It would take around 3.3 million trees an entire year to absorb this amount of carbon dioxide, based on the average absorption rate of a single mature tree, which is about 22 kilograms of carbon dioxide annually. This is on top of the carbon emissions from the continuous flow of heavy weapons from the United States to Israel during the past year of ecocide. Another study conservatively estimates that the climate cost of the first 60 days of Israel's military response was equivalent to burning at least 150,000 tons of coal. The Guardian reports, almost half of those carbon dioxide emissions resulting from U.S. shipments of supplies to Israel. A 2022 study estimating global military emissions found that militaries account for almost 5.5% of carbon dioxide emissions annually. If the global militaries were a country, they would have the world's fourth largest footprints, the study states. Carbon emissions associated with Israel's genocide in Gaza are contributing to climate change, extreme weather events, rising sea levels, and harmful effects on global ecosystems and human health, including air pollution, respiratory diseases, and disruptions to food and water supplies. Despite constant warnings of a climate emergency, there has been very little coverage of the catastrophic and long-term environmental consequences of Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza or other wars around the world. The Zionist regime has increased the budget for its Environmental Protection Ministry to fund projects aimed at reducing the environmental impact on itself, while it inflicts immense damage on Gaza and the broader region. There is a massive gap between global environmental rhetoric and the utter failure to address the environmental harm of military conflicts and hold belligerent violators to account. We cannot claim progress is being made towards sustainability through annual gatherings, climate movements, and global peace efforts so long as blatant violations of environmental laws are taking place with zero repercussions. Global frameworks addressing the challenges facing humanity must ensure that the law applies to everyone without exception. This is the only way that societies will take critical environmental issues like microplastics, water and soil pollution seriously, let alone the devastating impact of war on the environment. The Zionist regime's military actions in Gaza have likely breached several legally binding international environmental treaties it has committed to, including the Paris Agreement, the Convention on Biological Diversity, and the Mediterranean Action Plan under the Barcelona Convention. The use of heavy artillery and explosives in densely populated areas releases greenhouse gases and toxins, undermining emissions reduction goals under the Paris Agreement. The destruction of farmland, wetlands, and marine areas harms biodiversity, contradicting the Convention on Biological Diversity's objective to protect ecosystems. The bombing of Gaza's wastewater treatment plants, resulting in untreated sewage flowing into the Mediterranean, polluting marine environments, breaches the Barcelona Convention's commitment to protect Mediterranean waters. Additionally, hazardous debris and contaminants, including asbestos and unexploded ordnance, remain unmanaged, contradicting the Basel Convention principles on safe waste disposal. That convention, which Israel has ratified, does include an exemption from liability for parties in the event of armed conflict. While this provision addresses uncontrollable circumstances, it may also hinder accountability for hazardous waste management in conflict zones. Supplementary frameworks or revisions are needed to address the unique environmental challenges posed by armed conflict, as is plainly evident in Gaza. The Zionist regime has brazenly violated the fundamental principles of international humanitarian law, also known as the laws of war, with very little consequence. And it has also flagrantly flouted its environmental legal obligations with severe consequences for both local and regional ecosystems and global efforts to curb climate change. The ongoing genocide in Gaza epitomizes the utter failure of global institutions and the lie of rules-based order. The ongoing ecocide amid international silence has weakened the credibility of global environmental organizations, highlighting the persistent inability to enforce international laws and halt ecological destruction. If humanity cannot tackle these challenges in tiny Gaza, what hope is there for the planet as a whole?
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah appointed Naim Qassem as its new leader, succeeding Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, who led the organization for over 30 years. Nasrallah was martyred on September 27th during an Israeli airstrike that demolished several residential buildings in Beirut's southern suburbs. Sheikh Qassem assumes leadership in the wake of the recent martyrdom of Sayed Hashem Safieddine, a prominent Hezbollah figure initially seen as a potential successor to Nasrallah. Qassem's appointment comes at a time of heightened tensions and ongoing Israeli genocidal aggression against Lebanon, which has led to the loss of at least 2,500 lives. So his leadership marks a critical juncture for Hezbollah as it navigates this tumultuous period. In a statement the group announced, Hezbollah's Shura Council has agreed on the election of His Eminence Sheikh Naim Qassem as Secretary General of Hezbollah, entrusting him with the blessed banner on this journey. Sheikh Qassem became the first high-ranking Hezbollah official to deliver televised remarks following the assassination of Sayed Nasrallah, reaffirming the movement's commitment to continuing his legacy. Following Nasrallah's martyrdom, there were speculations that Hezbollah's Shura Council might delay appointing a new leader until after the conclusion of Israel's war against Lebanon. However, Qassem was chosen during the ongoing conflict, a critical moment that could significantly influence the group's future. A prominent figure within Hezbollah, Qassem has frequently engaged with the media and authored several books about the organization. His 2005 book, Hezbollah, The Story from Within, offers a unique insider's perspective on the history and operations of Hezbollah. This work is regarded as an essential resource for understanding the movement's background and evolution, and has been translated into several languages, including English. After the Israeli attack that led to Nasrallah's martyrdom, Sheikh Qassem emerged as the movement's public face, delivering multiple televised speeches aimed at reassuring supporters that Hezbollah's military capabilities remain robust and that the group is prepared for a prolonged struggle against Israel. Qassem was born in 1953 in Beirut to a family originating from Kfar Fila in southern Lebanon. He pursued a degree in chemistry at Lebanese University and went on to teach high school chemistry, including at a public school east of Beirut. In the mid-1970s, Qassem co-founded the Lebanese Union of Muslim Students and began his political career with Amal, a Shia political movement. Following the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran, he played a pivotal role in the establishment of Hezbollah, which was formed in response to the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982. In 1991, Qassem was appointed Deputy Secretary General of Hezbollah by Nasrallah's predecessor, Abbas al-Mousawi, who was assassinated in an Israeli helicopter attack the following year. Qassem maintained this role under Nasrallah's leadership, where his responsibilities included overseeing Hezbollah's parliamentary activities as a member of the Shura Council. In 2018, during the Trump administration, Qassem was placed under sanctions by the U.S. Treasury Department, along with other members of the Shura Council, for acting for and on behalf of Hezbollah. Following the October 7th attacks, Qasem asserted that Hezbollah would not remain on the sidelines in Israel's genocidal campaign against people in Gaza and Lebanon, declaring that the group was fully ready to engage with the regime. On July 3, 2024, senior Hezbollah commander Mohammad Nasser was killed in an Israeli airstrike. Later that month, another Israeli strike resulted in the martyrdom of Fuad Shukr, a top commander and key associate of Hezbollah leader Nasrallah. In September, at the funeral for senior leader Ibrahim Aqil and Hezbollah member Mahmoud Hamad, both martyred in Israeli strikes, Qasem declared that the group had entered a new phase in its struggle against Israel, characterizing it as an open-ended battle of reckoning. Since Nasrallah's martyrdom, Qasem has delivered a number of televised addresses. In his speech on October the 8th, he stated that the armed group supported efforts to establish a ceasefire for Lebanon. On October 15th, while reiterating the need for a ceasefire, he remarked that given Israel's indiscriminate targeting of Lebanon, Hezbollah retained the right to strike anywhere within Israel. Qasem has emphasized that the group's fighters are determined to repel Israeli ground incursions even in the face of painful blows over the past weeks. Recently, Sheikh Qasem vowed that the resistance would thwart Israel's destructive actions, regain control, and restore order, expressing confidence that their cause would ultimately triumph. Despite its setbacks, Hezbollah has continued to launch rocket, missile, and drone attacks against Israel and has put up a formidable fight against Israeli ground forces. The resistance group has just damaged Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's home in Caesarea in a drone attack and said a new escalatory phase was coming. Sheikh Qasem has taken up the mantle previously held by martyr Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah for over 30 years, reaffirming Hezbollah's commitment to its ongoing struggle. He has stated that the current actions of Hezbollah represent the bare minimum in their resistance efforts. While the battle against Israel is expected to be long and challenging, Qasem, at 71 years old, draws strength from the hard-won liberation of 2006. Achieved against all odds in the face of formidable opposition. He firmly believes that the ultimate victor is the one who endures to the end. As a symbol of continuity for Hezbollah, Qasem embodies the movement's steadfast resolve and dedication to its core mission.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرضه.
Peace be upon you, O trust.